You're listening to The Big Show with Patrick Dumas on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Big Show Hour 4, live from the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Crack Foundation, Boeing Foundation Walls. We have a simple permanent solution to stabilize your foundation. Contact Basement Systems. They're all things basementy. Visit dlbasementsystems.com. Stanley Cup playoffs entering day number 4. Got a full slate of action as well. Got a game on the radio tonight as well. Jays continue their series out in Kansas City, looking for 2 in a row. And the NBA playoffs, they continue as well with 3 games. But here we are, Big Show Hour 4. I'm Patrick Dumas, GVP along with me. 9:30, we're going to go out to Vancouver. We're going to talk a little Canucks with Jamie Dodd, co-host of Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650, as they get ready for game number 2 tonight, 8 o'clock. With the Nashville Predators. They were 4-2 winners there on Sunday, which was a nice little get there for Vancouver. Also, the crowd was amazing. The atmosphere was great. They were partying in the streets. It was the first home game for them in 9 years. So I want to get Jamie's thoughts on just how the atmosphere in that building, because like those two goals back to back within 12 seconds, like that's got to be one of the loudest that Rogers Arena has been since probably, I would say, BX's winner in game 5 in 2011.
Probably it has to be with they really haven't had a hopeful like run or a hopeful team since that that run to the Stanley Cup final in 2011.
Exactly.
So absolutely it's got to be that loud. Almost just as loud as what we saw in Carolina.
Yeah.
With those back-to-back goals with Martinook and Aho to get the Canes on top, and that game was crazy.
The playoff the crowds throughout the NA through the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs have been just bonkers. I know Dallas, the fans were a little quiet. They kind of got, taken aback when Mark
Silence
Stone scores and the Vegas Golden Knights get off to a quick start like they did, 2-0. But yeah, out of the home teams, Edmonton was rocking last night. Winnipeg will be again rocking this evening for game 2 against Colorado. But yeah, it was super fun watching these Canadian teams do their things. Good to see Toronto tie their series up with Boston as well. But yeah, we'll kind of go through the schedule here. We'll get your thoughts here, GVP. 5 o'clock, this one's going to be on Sportsnet. It'll be the Capitals and the Rangers. Did not watch any of game 1, but I know Matt Rempe and that fourth line, when they're activated, you needed that line. You needed Matt Rempe to, you can't just go around, elbowing guys or asking for fights in the postseason. You got to contribute. That fourth line was going.
Sure.
And the Rangers, man, we think this is probably going to be a quick series here. I have them sweeping the Capitals. I never like picking sweeps, but if I had to,
that was like the one sweep. That was the one sweep I picked as well.
Yeah,
was that one. I just think they're completely outmatched offensively, and it's not like the Washington Capitals are very good at keeping the puck out of their own net.
No, Charlie, you can only ask them to do so much. They were playing so well down the stretch just to get them into this point.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, they definitely. Got shown up there in game 1 against the Rangers. That'll be a 5 o'clock start on Sportsnet. 5:30, this was a really good game in game 1. Game 2, they had a couple days off here, or rather, one day off, I should say. Tampa Bay and Florida. Panthers held on there against the Lightning in game 1 early on. There was on Sunday. It was Sunday, 10:30 start Calgary time. This is going to be on a 5:30 start on Sportsnet 360. Panthers, Lightning. We worried maybe can the Lightning, do they have enough depth that they can get through this type of series? I think they can kind of go toe-to-toe with the Panthers, but I don't know. It just feels like the Lightning are just missing that depth that they've had throughout the postseason. We'll see.
Yeah, I kind of understand that. I think that game 1 was huge for Tampa Bay. They needed to get that, but they ended up falling short in it. It feels like these teams, like you said, can go head-to-head in a lot of the departments. It's just that Florida's given a slight edge in almost everywhere. I would say on their upper end talent on the forward side of things, I would give that edge to Florida, especially with what you're seeing out of Sam Reinhart right now, coming out of nowhere, being a disgusting goal scorer. And the way they're structured, they do have a lot of offensive weapons, but they win games by smothering you defensively.
Yeah,
and that's how you win in the playoffs here. Goaltending can kind of go either way. Bobrovsky has been good. Vasilevsky he hasn't been like cup winning Vasilevsky, but he's still an elite goaltender. So it's a coin flip in a lot of departments. It's just that I think more often than not, it's going to fall on the Panthers' side of things.
The thing is, with Tampa Bay, they don't have Alex Barkov. They don't have an Alex Barkov in their lineup that can... He's the best two-way center in the game now that Patrice Bergeron's left us for for better things in retirement. Yeah. But, you know, I know they were talking about this on the Merrick show yesterday. I think we have to stop talking how Alex Barkov is like the most underrated player in the NHL, because he's not underrated anymore. He might be the least appreciated star player in the league for what he does.
You know who else might be the least appreciated star in the NHL? Mm. Steven Stamkos.
Yeah, up there, totally. Yeah, Steven Stamkos. I know he
this guy's still playing for a contract.
Exactly.
Like, what?
Yeah, Stamkos is a UFA. It feels like they'll get something done there in Tampa Bay. Just, you can keep him down there. You don't have to pay him a ton of money.
I know. It feels a little disrespectful, right? Like, this is the best player in your franchise's history. Yep. He's got two cups with you now. And it's not like he's slowing down. He's a 40-40 guy for 81 points this year in 79 games.
Yeah, and he's a very good playoff contributor as well. Had the goal and an assist there in game number one. That's 5:30. You can find that one on Sportsnet 360. At 7:30 in Winnipeg, it's an 8:30 local start for them, a little bit late. Winnipeg took that one game lead, Wild 7-6 win. We talked to, you know, Winnipeg can make that adjustment defensively, they'll get better, but what are the adjustments on Colorado's side going to be? They don't have the same depth defensively that can maybe do it outside of, you know, like, yeah, they have they did have the top pair, but it felt like Devin Taves was taking school a little bit there in game one. They need the goaltending. We still don't know.
That's the only adjustment they can hope for, right? It's just a better performance goaltending-wise, like, because I like their offensive weapons. You could say that their top-end offensive talent is probably better than Winnipeg's. Winnipeg as a committee might overall be able to get this series done for them. But if you're the Avalanche and you score six goals and lose that game, it's all on goaltending.
And the thing is, Eustace Annunen, their backup, he did not practice yesterday. He's still battling some sort of sickness there in Colorado. So, I don't know. Signs pointing right now, if you wanted to take off of a skate yesterday, that it looks like it'll be Alex Georgiev again tonight for Colorado. But we'll see. It was Arvid Holm backing him up.
Thing with Colorado is I would say that you just need average goaltending for that team because that's what they had when they won the Stanley Cup.
The
guy who just retired the other day, Pavel Francouz, was the guy who got it done for them.
Yeah, and Darcy Kemper as well was a big part.
He was injured in the Cup final,
And Cale Makar said it post game. He was like, every mistake we made ended up in the back of the net.
Mm-hmm.
Jared Bednar said essentially the same thing. Like, that's the closest you can get to pretty much dragging your goaltender without saying it.
Yeah.
Mixing a little save or what a now here and then there, Georgiev, but we'll see. Winnipeg, Colorado, this still scares the living crap out of me in this series. I think they've got the, you know, 1A, 1B player in the world in Nathan MacKinnon. Obviously, Cale Makar is right up there as well. These are game breakers that can take over games, but, you know, outside of that, like, it was a lot of, like, garbage time stuff that Colorado got going there late. I don't think the game was as close as the score indicated. I thought Winnipeg did a super bang-up job till about, I don't know, the seven-minute mark of the third period. They had a three-goal lead, kind of hung on from there. You don't want to see them, obviously, have that type of happen. You need Hellebuck to make a save now and then as well, because that first one, when Nichushkin opened the scoring, you're like, come on, you want to make that save as well. But you know, if you had to throw him against the wall here, like, hey, who do you want to trust more? Who's not going to allow six again? It's probably Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I would say that this Jets team does have a tendency every now and then to fall asleep in games.
Oh, yeah.
And they can kind of honestly string those lapses together where it turns out to be like a 2-3-4 game losing streak. Mm-hmm. And you've seen that with this Jets squad over the last couple of years. So it's scary when you're going up against a team like Colorado where they have those game breakers and any mistake you make can be lethal.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it can go both ways. Like, if there is ever a Jets team to make a deep run, it's this one here. This series feels like it's going to go seven games. And I almost feel like this series is going to be such a war. I almost worry about, like, what's it going to be like for the Jets in round two or three, because you're going to be up against the gauntlet coming out of the Central here.
It does feel like Winnipeg can play a little bit more physical than Colorado can. I think Winnipeg can, if Winnipeg can get out to a quick lead tonight, you can throw that third line around. They can bully Colorado. They can bully them around, especially after you get off that top line. Like, it would be totally different if Gabriel Landeskog is in this series. I think you'd feel a whole lot better about Colorado just with, you know, they have a guy that can go toe-to-toe with Adam Lowry, really, in that sense.
Really, Nichushkin is their biggest physical presence that's going to play a lot of minutes for Colorado.
He was the one that was kind of like, he was giving it to the guys, like, you know, he was in a stick after the whistle. He was trying to goad some guys into some things, so maybe you want to see a little bit more. Because Nichushkin is a dangerous player. He had the goal, obviously. He spent some time with some other issues this year, and it was good to see him have an impact there. On Sunday. That'll be at 7:30. You can find that one on CBC and on Sportsnet Plus. And then the last game, 8 o'clock, we'll kind of preview the Canucks a little bit here in about 10 minutes' time or so with Jamie Dodd. But it is the Nashville Predators and the Vancouver Canucks. Canucks with a 4-2 win there on Sunday. And it was kind of like the Dakota Joshua, the third line. Dakota Joshua, Elias Lindholm, Connor Garland.
Yeah.
Like, this is the line that Rick Tocchet is just, I'm assuming, if you had to probably guess, it might be his favorite line, I would say.
Might be.
With the type of quality of players. Like, and I'm saying, like, the star talent that Elias Pettersson and JT Miller can throw at you, but for a line that can help you win in the postseason and what it can do.
It almost emulates the type of player Rick Tocchet was.
Exactly. You know? Just a grind it out, two-way type line, and that's exactly what Elias Lindholm is. He may have not shown up in the score sheet. I know Ian McIntyre of Sportsnet had a nice little article about, you know, Lindholm's time there, and yeah, he didn't light up the score sheet. You know, he wasn't lighting up the score sheet here in Calgary, but the role that he's embraced there in Vancouver on that third line, it's kind of fit like a glove there over the last few weeks. I'm kind of interested to see what Jamie says on what he's seen with that third line. But in Nashville, you almost have to get this one. You need to take game two. I don't think you can go down 2-0 heading home. I know the Bridgestone Arena is a rocking place, but you're just giving Vancouver. Like, Vancouver's a super good team.
Mm-hmm.
You go down 2-0, it's probably lights out there for the Preds.
Oh, yeah, I agree. If you lose this game, you're asking...
And they had a lead in game one. They were up 2-1.
You had them on their heels. Yep. And, like, you're asking a team that's definitely punching out of their weight class in Nashville to try and take on this, you know, offensive superpower in the Vancouver Canucks. You're asking a team in Nashville to beat that team that's also pretty structured well defensively and has good goaltending to beat the Vancouver Canucks four of the next five. I mean, good luck.
Yeah. As good as UC Saros can be, you know, they need to have those guys go up front. Like, Phil Forsberg needs to get going. Like, they had really one line was really going for Nashville, I felt. It was the Jason Zucker line. And that was the one line. That was the line that was paired against Elias Pettersson's line. It was the one line that didn't score for Vancouver. So you need to have more of the top names going for Nashville.
They're going to have to make that series ugly. It's going to have to get physical. You think that maybe it's going to get a bit more physical when things turn back to Nashville and they're kind of feeding off that energy, like you said. But if similar to how the Islanders want to get back in a series, they're going to have to grind it and make it an ugly dogfight.
I'm seeking those Islanders. Like, I don't know how. Like, I was looking at Patrick Waugh's, like, just the face on him. It looked like he looked just crestfallen, completely just taken aback of what he just saw there, blowing that 3-0 lead that they
had. Feels like they're done too, the Islanders.
Yeah, we never really gave them much of a chance at all in this series.
I picked that one in five.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if Carolina kind of takes it to them in game three, and then, like, the Islanders are able to scrape up an elimination game, and then the series goes back to Carolina. It's all she wrote.
Yeah, it's tough, and we'll probably see a goaltending change there. I know they went with Semin Varlamov for the first two games. Could see probably Ilya Sorokin there starting game three out on Long Island. That's your Stanley Cup playoff story. It's four games today, day four in the playoffs. Four games every day. It feels like going around the first round. It's the best round of the playoffs. Super fun. Can't wait to watch tonight's games. Blue Jays also back at it tonight. They're looking for two in a row out in KC. It's a 5:40 first pitch. The 13-10 Jays, 13-10 Royals. It'll be Kevin Gausman getting the start. He had a really good outing in his last one against the Yankees, but it was the bullpen that kind of let that one go away for them, and they ended up losing that game and not sweeping the Yankees. It'll be up against Michael Wacha, 1-2 on the year. Feels like the Jays right now, they're undefeated once they get to five runs. They're 13-0 once they get there, and they're 0-10 if they don't score five runs. So that's pretty much straight it. That's the record.
That's
13-10. And they did all the damage really early, and they have been doing damage.
I was about to say, it's always like that. There's been a couple games where it's like, you know, 5-0 first inning.
Yeah, you're like, we're going to get 10 runs.
I believe
this
it was
one,
the
maybe.
Second one in the Rocky series where they went up to like a
5-0 first inning.
Right.
That was all they scored.
Exactly. Yeah. And the man leading the charge right now is Georgie's buddy, Dalton Varsho. He's been red hot.
Yeah.
It's been amazing to see. I know that a lot of people kind of want to still maybe throw shade at Varsho. I know that George still holds a grudge with that just because he was the other man coming back in that the Moreno deal.
Yeah.
But, like, listen, he's been a really nice piece right in the middle of that lineup, and he's the kind of bat that that the Jays kind of need in the middle of that lineup because, like, the way they turn it over with, like, IKF at the bottom, mm-hmm. it's not like they're getting a lot of run production out of that to set up the top of the lineup again in like those middle third innings. So
mm-hmm. And it's not like this is the team that they straight up said we needed to prevent the runs. We need to become a stronger pitching team. Like this team is built on their pitching and defense, and that's okay if it's winning games. I know it's probably not going to win you a lot of playoff games because you're going to have to start hitting the home run. You're going to have to run into a few to win come postseason.
Yeah, but the Blue Jays' identity for so long has always been the long ball.
It was successful there for a good chunk of time, but it was they didn't have the horses pitching. They didn't have the – but it's trying to find that fair balance, and maybe Dalton Varsho's trying to get that back. Because I know Varsho, you ask him, he doesn't give a crap what Lourdes Gurriel and Gabriel Moreno are doing. That's what the fans are doing. And I think the only reason why Jays fans are so – taken aback by Varsho is because how that postseason went, how his regular season was, and then how Gabriel Moreno and Lourdes Gurriel go all the way to the World Series and have a great time. And yeah, Gabe Moreno's probably going to be a top 10 catcher when it's all said and done. Maybe not all time, but he's going to be a top 10 catcher in baseball.
In the league throughout his career.
Throughout his career. Yeah, he's going to be a top guy. And Lourdes Gurriel, you could take it or leave it with Gurriel. I think Dalton Varsho is a guy that's still trying to find his way in the league. He's only 26 years old. Mm-hmm. Baseball, probably out of any of the sports, has the longest developmental curve out of any sport.
Sure does.
It takes a long time for some of these guys to figure stuff out. So, Varsho's been great since really that Rockies series when he had his first home run.
I will say for the pitching there, because I felt like there was a little bit of worries with Gausman's mm-hmm. first couple starts, and now he's coming back from an injury there. They wanted to try Bowden Francis in the rotation early on. That seems like it hasn't worked.
But
found a little bit of something with Yariel Rodriguez here.
Yeah.
So that's been huge.
Yeah.
Because they need a consistent four mm-hmm. guy just to give you a solid five innings whenever it's his time to come out of the, get on the bump.
100%. So. I think I kind of alluded that to last week, and I think John Schneider's alluded to that as well, is Gausman, he didn't have a spring. I think he's used April as his spring. And, he's been through three starts. It'll be his fourth start tonight. I think you're going to start seeing the old gas man tonight with Kevin Gausman. And again, that's 5:40 first pitch. Blue Jays Central on Sportsnet 1 has you covered there at 5 o'clock. And just three games in the NBA tonight. Phoenix and Minnesota. That should be a fun series. Is Anthony Edwards. I know I was a lot watching some of the ESPN talk on NBA yesterday. And they kind of like, who's going to be that next one? After LeBron, and there's a lot of them. There's a lot of candidates, and who's going to be that next one or a face of the league. But I'm looking at Anthony Edwards, man. He's an actor already.
Yeah.
A pretty good one.
Yeah, he was in what is that movie called? The Adam Sandler movie?
Yeah,
the
scouting one.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Jeez. It's actually not a bad movie.
No, it's a very good movie.
Yeah.
But, drawing a blank here. Either way, he's in that one. He plays the villain. And, he's the face of Adidas.
Hustle.
Hustle.
That's called,
that's what it is. He's the face of Adidas basketball. I know he plays in a tough market. Not a lot of people know.
He also plays that brandable, like that marketing type style. He's jumping over people.
Yeah, like he's got the dunk.
Three,
he can talk. Like him give that scene where he's just yelling at Durant. Durant's just smiling.
Yeah.
Because he emulated Kevin Durant. That was his favorite player growing up. So cool to see Anthony Edwards finally have his moment. And if anybody, he could be maybe that guy. I know a lot of love for Jason Tatum as the next face of the
Zion,
NBA.
Zion, for sure,
if he can just stay healthy.
Could be Ja Morant if he gets his act together,
exactly.
But not no more.
Like, man, what are we doing? Like, the NBA is missing, like, Ja Morant right now. Like, obviously, he's injured. He's hopefully
he's lost his shoe deal with Nike.
Yeah,
and stuff like
hopefully
that.
He figures his things out and Zion. But, yeah, I think the NBA is going to be in good hands going forward after LeBron. And I think Anthony Edwards can take that charge and hopefully be the face of Minnesota basketball. That's a good team. They got, their ownership is a little bit messy right now. They got A-Rod in there as well. So hopefully, the T-Wolves can be that team going forward. They got a young group.
Yeah, and, Minnesota really hasn't had a true face of their franchise since Kevin Garnett, yep. right? For a long time, they had Ricky Rubio. They had Kevin Love.
Carl Anthony Towns is great.
Yeah.
He's not a face.
Derrick Rose had a little bit of a career renaissance with him for a couple of years and before he went to the Knicks. And, they're a team that's really had little to no success. They've kind of been an irrelevant franchise in the NBA, but they're on the come up, and they got their guy in Anthony Edwards.
Yeah,
he's a stud.
They are.
And he's going to be one of the big contributors to the Olympic team
if
he's able to fill up one of those last spots.
Yeah,
but
he was there at the FIBAs last year as well, contributing to their tournament. But yeah, Minnesota and Phoenix, that series tie, or T-Wolves lead that series 1-0 as well. Indiana's into Milwaukee, and Dallas into L.A., to take on the Clippers. Around the corner, we'll talk a little Canucks and Predators with Jamie Dodd of Canucks Talk. He's the co-host there over on Sportsnet 650. Canucks and Predators tonight on our airwaves at 7 o'clock for the pregame, 8 o'clock puck drop right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Jamie Dodd next. His Big Show Hour 4 continues here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Welcome back. Big Show Hour 4 here. We're live from the Doug Lacy Basement Systems downtown studio. Crack Foundation, Boeing Foundation Walls. We have a simple permanent solution to stabilize your foundation. Contact Basement Systems. They're all things basementy. Visit dlbasementsystems.com. Game 2 tonight in Vancouver between the Predators and Canucks. You can listen to it right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We'll have a pregame starting at 7 o'clock. Puck drop a little closer to 8:20, I would say. You can catch it right here on Sportsnet 960 or watch it over on Sportsnet West. And a guy who's all Canucks. He's co-host over on Canucks Talk. He is Jamie Dodd out at Sportsnet 650. Jamie, thank you so much for talking some Canucks with me this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. How's it going?
Good, brother, good. Were those 12 seconds at Rogers Arena the loudest since 2011 Game 5 overtime?
Yeah, it's got to be. I can't think of another instance, certainly in the intervening years, where it would have had any reason to be louder than that. And I mean, even, you know, after 2011, they made the playoffs, 2012, 2013, not a lot to cheer for in those series, not a lot to cheer for against Calgary in 2015. So that's really the first playoff moment for the Canucks since, as you said, the Game 5 in the 2011 Stanley Cup Finals. And coming, you know, 9 years after the last time they even hosted a playoff game, it was just an absolute explosion. It was a really incredible night for the fans.
Well, it's just there's a whole generation of Canuck fans that never got to experience, you know, playoff hockey in Vancouver. I know the atmosphere around the league over the opening weekend has been great, especially, you know, seeing in Winnipeg, you know, saw it last night in Edmonton and, of course, Vancouver. But, you know, they're just dancing on the Roger Nielsen statue and, you know, got a long way to go. But I totally get their excitement.
Yeah, and I know some Nashville fans are having some fun with it. Oh, you guys think they won the Stanley Cup. But again, I mean, it's been so long since I've just been able to experience it at all, let alone to have a memorable night like that. And it's been a drought. It's also been a drought with just like some horrific ups and downs and lows and awful moments. And so I think there was just an element of catharsis going into it. And yeah, a long way to go, as you said, but if the fans can bring that kind of energy home game after home game, I mean, the players, to a man, were very, very open about what that energy in the building meant to them. And I think you got to say that it played a factor. And, you know, it could be a huge factor going forward for the team, too.
Oh, exactly. You just feed off that hard not to. Talk to me about Elias Lindholm. I know statistically he hasn't done a lot. You know, he didn't do a lot in Calgary, didn't do a whole bunch in Vancouver. But it feels like this is a type of player that Rick Tocchet's loved and has him in a role right now on that third line between Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland. Just talk about how his play. He gets a big goal there, opening the scoring there on Sunday.
Yeah, it's been an interesting time for Elias Lindholm in Vancouver because obviously they go out, they jump the trade deadline, they pay a significant price to get him in. And the initial thought was, okay, we're going to plug this guy in our top six. We can move him to the wing, or we can move maybe Pettersson or Miller to center and play him, or sorry, Pettersson or Miller to the wing and play Lindholm at center, and we'll get some extra juice in our top six. That didn't work out. Rick Tocchet discovered pretty quickly that he likes Elias Lindholm more as a center, but I think there were some hard feelings maybe all around from the player, from management, that, hey, you guys brought me in to do one thing. Now you're bouncing me around with all these different line mates. I'm not getting a chance to show what I can do. The team was maybe a little underwhelmed with Elias Lindholm's performance. Then he was injured for a span of games towards the end of the season. So it was kind of a big question mark. But I think what we've seen now is, okay, the top six idea didn't work out. But this is still a really good defensive center that we can plug in on our third line. Connor Garland is there to kind of carry the offensive generation on that line. And so, all right, plan A didn't work out for Elias Lindholm, but plan B is still pretty good. And as you mentioned, Rick Tocchet consistently, even when he's been juggling Lindholm around the lineup, has had a lot of praise for the details in his game, the defensive side in his game. And now you have this third line where they can contribute offensively. You know, if they're out there against, in this series, the Ryan O'Reilly, Philip Forsberg line, you're not too worried about that matchup. And I think he can be a real weapon for them. He played great. He got the opening goal, you know, a bit of a gift from UC Saros, but he was physical. He was sharp on the PK. He was winning faceoffs. That's the role for him, right?
Yep.
Complimentary offense, but take care of all of those other things. And I think after some ups and downs, we're seeing how he can contribute to this team in the playoffs now.
Exactly. The scoring can go away, but, you know, that defensive side, he's still a Selke candidate, and he's still one of the better two-way guys in this game. How much of a cult following or cult hero following is Dakota Joshua going to have when it's all said and done?
Oh, here? Man. I mean, I what's bigger than a cult? I don't know, because it was, you know, he won the Unsung Hero Award that the team gives out every year, which it was the second year in a row winning it, which I kind of think should be impossible. It's like, well, you already won it last year. I mean, I think we're all aware. I think in Vancouver, this, like, people are well aware of how good this guy is. And I mean, going into the playoffs, there was a hope that with his style of game, the physicality, that he'd be kind of an X factor for the team. And I think we saw that exactly on display. You know, he was a monster on the forecheck, throwing his body around. Then the big go-ahead goal, the empty netter as well. That's exactly what fans were hoping to see. There's been so many great stories and great individual stories for the Canucks. But, you know, you go back to the start of training camp, Rick Tocchet called him out for not being in shape, for his conditioning at the very beginning of training camp, right? Like, we didn't know, would this guy have a regular spot in the lineup game one of the regular season? And then he's just found some chemistry with Connor Garland that has clicked, that has been amazing. And I think for fans that don't get a chance to watch the Canucks on a regular basis, but are now maybe tuning in on the playoffs, you know, Dakota Joshua, not a household name, but fans are going to see this guy play. And, hey, he's a UFA come this summer. Yeah. And I think, you know, don't be surprised if you're seeing a pretty big number for Dakota Joshua on July 1st, because the way he played in that game, the way he's shown he can play, that combination of skill and physicality, you know, that is always in demand, and he's setting himself up for a really, really nice payday.
Oh, 6'3", 207. Can't really complain about that much. I'll continue the talk on this third line. Connor Garland, you know, he was written off for dead by a lot of Canuck folk, either the media or fans. Doesn't want to be there, just want to get rid of him. But maybe he's the player that's getting the least amount of love, but he's had such a good time with Rick Tocchet, you know, having another 20-goal season.
It's been enormous for them. And again, you know, to go back to the training camp, the eve of the regular season, news broke that Connor Garland's agent had permission to try to find a trade fit with another team. And the interesting thing about that was, I don't think it was, and you know, I know Garland's been adamant on the record, it wasn't him requesting a trade. Mm-hmm. It was him recognizing this management team wants to trade me. So maybe I can pitch in. If they don't want me, that's fine. Maybe let my agent pitch in and we'll try to find a fit somewhere else. Obviously that didn't happen. And you know, the interesting thing with Connor Garland is I think he scored the first goal of the Canucks season against Edmonton, but then he was a pretty dry spell for goals. I think he had 3 goals even as late as like late December, early January, but the underlying numbers were always really positive for Connor Garland. And that third line, at the time it was him, Joshua, and Teddy Bluger, they were generating ton of chances. They just weren't getting the bounces. The new year flipped, and then all of a sudden, they're going in. As you said, he finishes with 20 goals. Dakota Joshua scoring a ton. You know, Teddy Bluger had a stretch where he was like point per game over like 15 games because that line was so hot. And really what it's allowed the Canucks to do is with JT Miller on the top line, Elias Pettersson on the second line, and now Connor Garland on the third line, you've got 3 really, really good playmakers to kind of sustain your offense and set up the scores up and down your lineup. And you can split them up, and it just adds such another dimension to the lineup that if they had traded Connor Garland, I mean, their bottom 6 would be kind of an offensive wasteland at this point. So he's been a hugely important player for them.
I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe there was one line that didn't register a point or didn't have much going was the Pettersson line. And they were kind of shut down by the Jason Zucker line. They did a pretty good job on them. Is there something there that Tocchet's trying to work on to get Pettersson going? Because it feels like if he gets going, look the hell out.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the sentiment. And boy, man, we have spent a ton of time talking about Elias Pettersson in this city this year, you know, from the contract status to then he signed his contract and he hasn't looked quite right, quite the dominant Elias Pettersson that he can be, really, since around the time that contract talk was happening. And, you know, yesterday at practice, Rick Tocchet had said, like, look, it's my job to get Elias Pettersson going. I thought that line was just okay last night. And, you know, it wasn't a standout game for Elias Pettersson by any stretch. It's tough to balance it, though. Like, you look at one of his line mates and it's Sam Lafferty, and hey, Sam Lafferty had a nice season, but he's a fourth line player. And now he's playing up the lineup with one of your star centers in Elias Pettersson. And the retort to that is always like, well, he's a star player. He shouldn't need all that much help. He should be able to do it on his own. And I get that. I think that's actually a pretty fair response. So like, I think Rick Tocchet has probably spent a ton of time thinking, okay, who can I put with Elias Pettersson? How can I use him? What do I need to do to get that line going? And as you said, if it does get going, it's a clear advantage over what Nashville can roll out in the middle of their lineup in this series. But we've spent kind of a long time. And look, I still think it's there. I've always been a huge believer in Elias Pettersson, the player. But there's no doubt that he has to get to another level as well for the Canucks to go on a run here.
We're talking with Jamie Dodd, Canucks Talk co-host over on Sportsnet 650. Talk to me about Quinn Hughes, man. Like, I know the goal got wiped out, ended up being Pierce Suter's goal, but you know, this is going to be the soon to be Norris Trophy winner. And, you know, picking up in the postseason, like, people forget, back in the bubble, he had 16 points in that run, that surprising run, and he's just continually just getting better, it seems, every game as it goes on. Talk to me about Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, he's been absolutely phenomenal this year. Really, he has. I think it's a no-doubt Norris Trophy award season. I know that, you know, Roman Josi had a phenomenal finish to the season. You know, Cale Makar got his points, even though some of the underlying impacts maybe weren't as strong. But I think the thing with Quinn Hughes is, like, he is this team's best offensive player. And I say that fully aware that they have JT Miller, who cracked 100 points and is a power play wizard, and fully aware that they have Elias Pettersson, who cracked 100 points last year and is incredibly talented. But when you just look at what this team does offensively when Quinn Hughes is on the ice, it's completely different than what they're able to do when he's off the ice. He changes the profile of this team in a really significant way. Like, the puck's always on his stick. He dictates the flow of the game in a way that I don't think any other defender in the league does. And really, there's only a handful of players, I think, in the league that are able to do it. And, you know, one of the things that will kind of jump off the stat page this year is he went to work on the summer and really improved his shot from kind of a liability to a bit of a weapon. You know, 17 goals from the blue line this year. And a lot of that was just a willingness to get into those dangerous areas and uncork a wrist shot. And it's just that kind of thing that you love to see from a player, right? The awareness of, all right, what are the weaknesses in my game? How can I improve? And then he's also taken over the captaincy this year and done a fantastic job in that role as well. So you add it all up. You know, the fans voted JT Miller MVP this year. I get it. He's kind of a fan favorite, emotional leader, but Quinn Hughes was the most important player. Quinn Hughes was the best player easily in my book for the Canucks this year.
Nikita Zadorov, that was the first trade the Flames and Canucks got together with, end of November. And then he was trusted there. He was closing out the game there for the Canucks. I know it's he's been a roller coaster. We call him the Russian roller coaster out here in Calgary. And, you know, you get some good, you get some bad. But talk to me about kind of like how Quinn Hughes has been. Nikita Zadorov, he's been a nice fit there.
Yeah, it's worked out well. And, there were times during the season, as you said, look, it's up and down. The highs are really, really exciting with Nikita Zadorov. Sometimes the lows you don't love, and I think that led to a little bit of frustration from Rick Tocchet at different points. But you look at the way they've got it lined up now, and he's playing with Ian Cole. Ian Cole has slided over to the right. I think those two even had some minutes together when they were both with the Colorado Avalanche.
Okay. So
there's a familiarity there, and also, like, Ian Cole is just the quintessential calm veteran defenseman, right? So if there's anyone in the league who's going to be able to kind of temper a little bit of what Nikita Zadorov does when he maybe gets too excited out there, but also just kind of clean up, hang back, right? Be ready to put out the fires that might result from some of Nikita Zadorov's adventures. I think Ian Cole is kind of the perfect guy to do that. And I think the thing with Zadorov is you want him to play on that edge where he is dynamic. He can be dynamic with the puck. You know, he's using his physicality. It's just a matter of making sure it doesn't go over the edge. And in game one, I think that was really a blueprint performance from Zadorov, from the whole defense corps, right? Like Myers was super physical. Zadorov was physical. You know, Carson Soucy played well. Ian Cole played well. Now, it's not going to be every game, but if you get more games like that than not, I think the Canucks are going to be a really tough out. And I do think that that Ian Cole pairing and just kind of the stabilizing factor that Cole can bring to Zadorov's game, you know, that could be a key to kind of keep him on the right side of the line going forward.
I don't know if it's a media thing. It's probably just more of a media thing, and maybe the fans make a big deal out of this. But the travel in this series, I believe it's the one it's the series that you will travel the most in out of all of them. Is that a thing that's kind of creeped into the room at all? Like, hey, I get it's not like you're in Nashville and then you got to go to another destination quickly. It's like you're in Nashville, you're there for a few days, you can settle in. I don't think it's a big deal, but is that kind of still talked about? How like, hey, we got to go to go through three time zones.
I mean, you're all in the same boat, right? Nashville's in the same boat. They had to come out here. It's definitely a media thing. I know my co-host, Thomas Drantz, he covers the team for The Athletic, too, and he's traveling, and he was not excited that he was going to be making those connecting flights.
We had Frank Saravalli on, and he was like, I got to take two flights to get there. It's all like, calm down, you guys.
Yeah. So it's definitely a media thing. But the scheduling was going to be really interesting because there's all these concerts booked in both cities, and there was even some thought that, like, the NHL might put games 6 and 7 back-to-back. Now, that would be a nightmare, right?
That's
if you're playing in Nashville and then flying back for a game 7 in Vancouver the next day. They avoided that, right? So even after today, you know, they've got a couple days off before game 3 in Nashville. Then they'll play, you know, games 3 and 4, and I think another couple days off coming back to Vancouver. So you've got a little bit of a buffer time in from the travel. So, look, could it be the kind of thing where you're logging more miles, and if it's a long series and you're doing the flight multiple times going into game 2, does it put you – or, sorry, round 2 if they win – does it put them at a bit of a disadvantage? Maybe, but in this series, I don't think the players are concerned.
And just a couple more here. Like, just with looking on the Nashville side of things, like, is it just essentially take away Philip Forsberg, take away Ryan O'Reilly, and everything else will kind of settle in for the Canucks? Is there any sort of real, like, I know, like, they had a 2-1 lead. They're, like, I'm talking like Nashville's a bad team or not, but, like, I think they can still give Vancouver a run in this series, but is there any sort of like, hey, we win this one tonight, it might be lights out for Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly a lot of fans will think that. Look, it's going to be – Nashville has a great crowd as well.
Sure.
They've got a great a great home ice advantage there in Nashville. So those games won't be walkovers by any stretch. You know, I look at that game from Nashville's perspective. You can kind of think of it a couple different ways, right? On the one hand, hey, we had the lead in the third period. We were right there. It got away from us. But we can absolutely win this. And, hey, it's only one game. Go win game 2 of the series, and then it's a tie series. You know, the other way to look at it is they had the lead in the third. This Vancouver team has not excelled at chasing the game and coming back from deficits, but we let them do it, and we lost a game that we were leading in the third period. And the other thing I would say is also they won the special teams battle in that game, right? They got the only power play goal of the game. Now, Vancouver's penalty kill was really strong after that. So you just take those two things together, right? Winning the special teams battle, having the lead going into the third period, and not getting anything out of it, it feels like a massive missed opportunity. And there's still things that the Predators can do. I think Andrew Brunette's a really good coach. I think tonight's going to be a fascinating game to see how he responds. But as you said, if they are not able to take a game to get the split, the Canucks are already heavy favorites in this series, especially after that first win. It's going to feel like I don't want to jinx anything here, but it's going to be a really tough road back for Nashville if they can't get it done tonight.
Is there any sort of adjustments that Vancouver needs to really make? Because I thought they did a pretty bang up job. This is kind of what you want to do to this first playoff game, and for a lot of these guys, you can't really complain much from game one. But are there any adjustments that you'd like to see differently heading into tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I think who is playing with Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander is going to be interesting. You know, I mentioned Sam Lafferty is there. I suspect he'll be there again tonight, but you know, it's one thing as long as you're winning. If the results go the other way, I think that's going to have to be a spot that that Rick Tocchet looks like. I think the biggest thing is, you know, game one really turned when the Canucks forecheck started to have success early in the second period. And the first period was kind of played more at Nashville's pace, a lot of rush chances back and forth. They were transitioning the puck really quickly. And, you know, the forecheck has been the Canucks' bread and butter in terms of offense all year. So just do what they need to do. You know, whatever adjustments you made going into the second period that were, you know, helped your forecheck get home, if you can do that from puck drop tonight and really put your stamp on the game, I think that's going to be absolutely huge.
Excited for tonight. Jamie, can't wait to watch. I know you guys extended 3 hours. When you guys start up?
Yes. We are going at 11 a.m. Pacific, so I guess that would be noon at Calgary time. So, yeah, 11 to 2, and then just wall-to-wall coverage in general here on Sportsnet 650.
It's going to be awesome. Awesome environment tonight. Can't wait to watch it. And we'll talk again. Hopefully the Canucks can continue on this and have a nice little run here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. There's Jamie Dodd, Canucks Talk co-host over at Sportsnet 650. Yeah, Canucks and Predators Game 2. You can find it tonight on Sportsnet 960. I believe Azam and Shan will have Shan will have Sean. My brother is
Sean.
New
guy.
That we nickname Shan sometimes.
Got your wires crossed.
Yeah, my wires crossed. Here's Shan, Virgie, and Azam, Nanji will have the pregame tonight for the Canucks and Predators and take you through all the rest of the NHL action. Again, four games tonight, as well. The Blue Jays continue their series with the Kansas City Royals tonight as well. 5:40 first pitch, Kevin Gausman up against Michael Wacha. If you haven't had a chance to see Teague Ginla play this year, if you haven't been able to watch a Kelowna Rocket game at all, you will have a chance to watch him. He's headed over to the U18s in Finland to represent Canada. So Teague, in his draft year, gets to play in the IIHF Under-18 World Championships starting on Thursday. I believe our boy Jason Bugla is out in Finland to talk that one. So that'll completes the Canada roster at 25. So a nice little add there for Canada. And Teague Ginla, nice little chance to see him in his draft-eligible year.
Yeah, it's cool. Whenever some of these guys who are headed for the draft, it's kind of cool to get a chance to see them play some more hockey and some more meaningful hockey. I don't think it could hurt anyone's draft stock. It can only boost it, don't you think?
Yeah, exactly. This is one of your last real game action tournaments you have ahead of the draft before you get into your combine and your skill stuff closer to the draft. So yeah, this is going to be an awesome moment for Teague and Team Canada. I know a lot of Flames fans have Teague circled as maybe a possible pick.
How can you not, right?
It
just makes sense.
For marketing, it's an easy win, easily.
Yeah, exactly. And it almost feels like it's a no-win situation. If you take them, and if things, for some odd reason, doesn't pan out the way you want it to.
The pressure.
And you're seeing some of the other players that you possibly passed up on.
Yeah.
Then, how can you not get frustrated? And then vice versa, you think you do all the right scouting, you think you take the best player available, and you get it wrong, Flames fans are 100% going to point fingers at a guy like Teague Ginla if he goes on to have an outstanding career.
But right now, the way he's rocketing up these draft, pardon the pun, where he's going up the draft boards is just because he's playing well. He's playing super well. Like, he might be taken before 9.
Bukala has said before, he thinks he could be the biggest wild card in the first round.
Yeah.
You go within the top 10 for sure, or outside the top 10, maybe in as high as six, knocking on the door of the top 5.
I think Sammy Kaws had him as 6 in his last draft rankings. So
and
it all depends on how teams value these players. That's totally.
And people want to draw comparisons to his dad for obvious reasons, but from people that I've talked to or you've talked to, we've had Derek Neumeyer and a bunch of other guys on the show. It's like, he's a completely different player than what his dad is.
Yep.
Completely different. He's not that same type of power forward guy. He's a much more skilled finesse. Still has the shot, though. Still put the puck
good
in the net. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited to see more of him, for sure.
That's a pretty cool story. So, Teague Ginla headed over to play with Canada in the U18s. That'll do it for us today. Busy day ahead on the sporting calendar. Stanley Cup playoffs rolling on. Got the Predators and Canucks on our airwaves tonight at 8 o'clock. Of course, the Jays continue their series out in Kansas City. I want to thank everybody involved in today's show. Matt Marchese, David Pagnotta, Jesse Granger, Jamie Dodd. You can get all those interviews up on our Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you to GVP for making us sound so good. The Jeff Merrick Show is up next. I do have a lineup. It'll be kicked off by Elliot Friedman at 10 o'clock. Ian McIntyre, 10:35, talking a little Canucks. And at 11 o'clock, Chris Weidman, former NHL defenseman. And then at 11:30, they'll be playing a Ryan Smith interview, I guess, talking about Utah. So there you go.
Cool. Did you see that Ryan Smith wants to do a bracket for the name with fans?
No, I didn't.
He was on McAfee's show.
Okay.
And he wants to do a bracket with the fans to choose the new name for the Utah team. How do you feel about that?
Hey,
a bracket. I feel like you're going to end up with a pretty wild name.
Yeah, 8 mascot bracket to help the franchise, and that he has ways to make sure that the AI bots don't interfere with the process. Pat McAfee continues his crusade to call them. Okay, we've had that suggested a few times, but can't have that. But yeah, that'd be cool. Be kind of different. I know they've had name the team contests before, and you know, the winner gets like a jersey and season tickets. They used to do that a lot in the 80s and 70s when naming teams, and then that's kind of just boardroom.
Yeah,
they decided, but it's cool. Kind of
remember when Calgary had a name the team contest for the Calgary Vipers? Remember when we had a baseball team around here,
minor league baseball team?
Yeah, and then they had the mascot Slider and whatnot. Remember that?
Love or no? They were Northern League. Yeah, no, yeah. Slider was great. Snake with hands.
Yeah.
Snake with hands. Theo Fleury played a game.
I saw that game. I watched that game. It was amazing.
As well. But yeah, that'll do it for us. Like I said, Jeff Merrick Show is up next, kicking off the show with Elliot Friedman. And then game 2 of the Canucks and Predators, 8 o'clock tonight. Azam and Shan, damn it, have your pregame at 7 p.m. right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Keep it locked right here all day. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.